Did issues like childcare or sexual harassment or issues around uniforms, maternity leave, those kinds of things, which could be, I suppose, specifically women's issues, ever come up in the union while you were there?
No. Sexual harassment, the only thing I can think of is that a maid might have a problem with a guest if she hadn't followed the rules about leaving a door open, this type of thing. That was the only thing that I can think of specifically. Maternity, no, still, 15 years ago, that wasn't an issue.
You were a delegate both to the BC Fed and also Trades and Labor Congress.
That's right.
Can you talk a bit about your responsibilities as a delegate?
I spoke on various issues that would come up as they related to the hotel and restaurant industry. Probably tried to make people more aware of the difficulties that are inherent in a transient industry, rather than a person learning a trade and staying right in an area so that they didn't have to keep reorganizing. I think that any courses that were offered by either of the organizations, I certainly took them. That's the first time that I realized that there was a Maternity Protection Act in the Department of Labor was when Bill Black was conducting a course out at UBC. So I think I took every course that there was. I know I took a course at the workers' compensation, and I can remember the first thing happened when I came to work here was somebody showed me a leaflet, and I'm saying, hey, I was there, and there was my picture taken, when I was representing the union.
Right.
I also had the opportunity to be sent to international conferences. And I think my first big one was down in Chicago. And I remember when I got off the plane on Easter Sunday in Chicago, I was nearly ready to, if I could have figured a way of getting back on the plane and coming home, I would have done so because I was just found it a little larger than I had expected. But again, I found myself on committees immediately there. And had the benefit of finding out what they were doing in the United States and what sort of training they were carrying on. Went to Western conferences down the coast and again found out what they were doing, which had probably led me to believe that things that happen in the United States probably happen anywhere from 5 to 10 years later here. I keep saying to people, if we could only benefit by their errors, and could move and, say, take advantage of those, we wouldn't be in the spots that we are sometimes today. And that I think that applies to many things, not just to unionism. But the International Union, there we always had women on the executive, and that women business agents were not unusual in the United States. It was a very common thing. I didn't see it as strange. They had... places like Seattle where, you know, all the waitresses were in unions and there were a number of women business agents, both in the cooking, maybe in a cooking. In those days, they didn't always have miscellaneous locals. You would have a cook's local and a waitress's local, this type of thing.
Did you ever find any conflicts between the international and the Canadian or...
During my period of time, all I can say is that it was very evident to me that all the money that was paid out in law legal fees, plus the money that was paid the international representatives, was far in excess of the number of membership that we had here. We were getting, $50,000-$60,000 a year. We're at a point of time where we're lucky if we had 1,000 members in the province. And the per capita we were paying to the international was very low and included the death benefit and a monthly magazine.
Because I know at different points in the union's history there were some real conflicts between Canada and the international?
Not in the period of time that I was active. And I must say that I got a great deal of my training from the international representative, which probably would, because it was that type of a relationship, he would be pointing out costs of things, not to try and convince me it was a good thing, but so that I could better explain to members what happened.
Was training a really big issue for you because you saw it as a way of establishing a stable workforce?
Not only that, but in the office I kept finding people coming in from Europe that had all sorts of training that could give me certificates. We weren't doing anything. This really bothered me. This I felt was the thing. And we did. We put on night school courses for waitresses. I can remember when management in the Georgia said, now we've got this beautiful dining room. If people don't understand what wine is and how to serve properly, they're not going to have jobs here. So this was probably the start of it, plus the fact that I had the exposure to the training that was going on in the United States. Training was such an important thing. It seemed a natural thing to me that should be followed up.
What kind of grievances were common?
Well, in many times, I would have women come in with a grievance because she'd been let go. I would sit down and say, all right, now let's write out exactly what happened and then find out what you want me to do. After I had written all those things down, the woman would turn to me and say, do you think I'll be cut off unemployment insurance because of this? They weren't prepared to fight to go back on the job. All they were concerned about at that time would be, could I get my unemployment insurance?
So that would mean that very few grievances would actually...
I had grievances that I didn't know enough about the legislation. At one time when the government brought in equal pay, and we had we had a pot washer and a dishwasher, and these were actually different jobs. The pot washer washed pots and the dishwashers washed dishes. But when they brought in an automatic dishwasher, they put the men on it because it was a very heavy job, but one woman got on it. So they were all being paid pot washers' wages, and I just walked in and said, there's equal pay. She's working here with the men, so you have to pay her equal pay. And they said, that's fine, and paid her.
Can you talk about what your responsibilities were as business agent?
Well, they covered everything. As a business agent, depending on how many you had at staff, sometimes there were only two of us. So I might be down at unemployment and insurance, appealing somebody's case. I might be getting in touch with the workers' compensation about someone that should have been covered. I may be negotiating an agreement. I may be helping organize a place. And I might be looking after a grievance. When I first started, we were also responsible. We did not have checkoff, so you had to collect dues. I would go into a hotel and start on the top floor and walk around and hopefully get, maybe if I couldn't catch people that way, catch them at lunchtime and write out a receipt for the $2. I often stood on street corners writing out receipts for $2, feeling as if I was very conspicuous. They say, you don't have to give me a receipt right now. I say, no, I'll write it out right now. I didn't like to be standing on the street corner picking up $2. You ended up being everything, trying to be everything to all people. I certainly discovered that particularly people who were working with tip money, got it and spent it before they even realized they had it. They bought things on time in the summertime when they were busy, and then in the wintertime didn't have any money to keep up with it because they were working on short time and making less tips, and were going to places like Hustle Finance to borrow money. So we started a credit union, and I would try and hit a hotel on payday and say, well, whatever you've got in your pockets today, you've just got paid, why don't you give me that? And then try to teach them something about borrowing from the credit union. But I can remember one woman coming in and telling me how much money she had spent, how much she had saved since she went on to the credit union, and then end up by telling me she had just come from meetings where she bought two pairs of stockings on a revolving account. So where I thought I was doing a job of education, I discovered that you still had a lot more education. They didn't have that basics. You tried to explain to them about income tax, that if they did not make a declaration about tips and that they had a record to substantiate it, that they were then open to charge and that they would arbitrarily assess them, and to try and convince them that they could keep records themselves, which would show, it was evident to me that you could have a woman working on a counter who could get a 50-cent tip for a 10-cent cup of coffee. You had other women who could serve a table and the bill could be $10 and she mightn't make any more than 50 cents. That some people had an ability to give service or say something that influenced people to leave a large tip. I tried to explain things like, it isn't in your advantage to give away things you're not supposed to give away, because people tip on an average of what their bill is, so the more you can sell, the more your tip is going to be. And having worked in the industry, I certainly had a lot of things that I had learned. I felt, used to say, if you're going to work in this industry, then make it worthwhile for people to give you a tip. Learn how to give something that is extra service, even if it only appears to be extra service.
Did having a history of working in the industry make a big difference in your ability to?
I think so. I think it was very important. And with the maids, who generally were much older than me, I was fortunate that I went gray prematurely, so no one really understood how young I was. And I traded on that. I really emphasized my gray hair, and so that people felt that I had much more years of experience, when in actual fact some of it was things that I had learned through reading or through taking courses. And I continually was taking night school courses or anything that was available that would teach me something about management side, so that I could understand what they were doing or ways that were going to help the people that I was representing. We had A, B, and C class hotels that came into being on the basis of the ability of an employer to pay. That was really it. And I tried taking women who were working in a C class and moving them to a B and moving them up to an A, explaining actually resumes, although we weren't using that word in those days, how important it was to show that you had bettered yourself every time you moved. But I also had women who were moved from a B to an A and said, I would rather go back to the others because there isn't the same amount of pressure, and because in that area maybe we have fishermen or loggers who come in and they are always very good with their money. Where if you go into the better class hotels, you may be looked down upon, and they begrudgingly leave you something, or only leave it if they happen to see you. So a woman might move back to the Hilton Hotel or the St. Regis Hotel because she knew, you know, Christmas time, she really made a lot of money there. So some of them were happy, even though they were making less hourly wages, the pressure certainly wasn't the same. It's a different thing. Some of them could move up and could learn to go along with this. It was difficult for women to start in some of these areas. And we'd have to say things like, you know, if you can manage to get past the first 2 months, because that's when they're really watching you, they expect you to make mistakes. If you get through that, then your chances of being continuously employed are increased that much more. And the pressure will be off correspondingly because you've now proven yourself. So a lot of it was maybe, you know, a question of giving confidence to them, of showing areas where women had moved up from being maids and had got to be housekeepers.
Right.
These things did happen.
What kind of skills were necessary to be a business agent? What did you need to know and to be good at?
Well, I guess you have to know your own contracts so that you can interpret them correctly. You have to know what happens in the Department of Labor so that you know how you go about making applications, how to make applications correctly, how to apply for mediation officers. There are a good many things that can happen. There's no doubt in my mind that the reason I got a job as a conciliation officer, as an IRO, was due to the fact that during the period of time I worked for the union, I spent a lot of my time picking the brains of the people who worked for the Department of Labor so that I was familiar as to what legislation they had that we may not have in our agreement and what other people had in their agreements where we could move up to it.
Did you need to be able to have confidence in speaking?
I didn't have any confidence in speaking, excepting when I got angry, but then you picked it up. You know, I always found the one-to-one relationship very easy. I also ended up being recording secretary for the union, a job which I continually tried to unload. But the people had tied my position with the union with being recording secretary, and no matter how I spoke to them, insisted on putting me back into office every year. Even the year I left, I was still had been reelected again as recording secretary. I really wanted to be out sitting with the people. What happened was that I sat up on the platform, and then after the meeting was over, I spent an hour at least having people come and talk to me about things they should have brought up on the floor, hadn't had enough courage. Sometimes I was able to do for them what other people did for me, get enough confidence to get up and say it. But I'm very impressed now with the fact that the Women's Rights Committee and the BC Fed are carrying that part out, and that women are learning there how to speak up in their own unions. Fortunately, they didn't have that when I was there. And it took quite a bit of nerve on my part at first to get up and speak. And I always was very annoyed because under great stress my voice would go a little squeaky, and I never was sure when this was going to happen. It might happen with a small group or it might happen with quite a big group, but you tried it anyway.
Right, okay. Did you find that many people attended union meetings?
No. What usually happened was when their particular contract was coming up, that was when they were there. We did, for a period of time, have a draw, so everybody put in so much money each week, each month, and bought a ticket. And when that got to be a great amount, then because people heard about it, more people turned up. So it was sort of seemed like you got good attendance by dangling the carrot, rather than suggesting that you were going to fine people for not attending. And certainly with the hotel and restaurant union, it's something you couldn't, because there were always going to be people who would be on shift who couldn't attend. We tried to vary the hours and make it close to the hours so that if you were working downtown, you could manage to stay downtown and come to the meeting and still get finished early enough. But it was always difficult. Most of the people, again, the women that would be attending, were probably those who did not have children.
So, for the most part, were active women single or separated, single parent?
I would say yes, yes, very definitely. So, someone like myself, whose husband may not even be in town, or women who were widowed.
You said earlier that your husband was involved in his union. How did he feel towards your activity, towards the level of responsibility that you took on? And
well, because he was working out of town a fair amount of the time, it wasn't too upsetting to him. When he returned, then it was a question that I never knew whether, you know, if he happened to be home and not working and decided that was the night he was going to put the potatoes on, that was the night I didn't get home till 8 o'clock. And I didn't always have an opportunity to phone. But if he was in town, he would probably be working a night shift. Therefore, it actually resulted in both of us learning to live apart and eventually coming to a breakup when I came to the realization that I was sharing an apartment with a man whom I saw occasionally on the weekends. You know, it was just, we had lost everything that we had in the 19 years we were married at the end. And finally, when he tried to exercise some control over what I did, that I just said, I'm sorry, I guess I'm going to have to move up and live by myself.
Did you find in your activity as a woman in the union movement that at any point there was any discrimination against you because you were a woman? You talked about how you
were support. I guess you picked it, something. Yes, I did find that my line of reasoning didn't. I may get to the same conclusion as a man, but I usually arrived at it by a different avenue. I discovered as a member of the joint board that I was well advised to talk to several people and use a little political maneuvering before I brought up a subject. And in some cases, if I knew it was something really controversial, that I tried to implant it in some man's mind that it was his idea, because obviously I didn't think like them. Sometimes some of the things that I really felt were necessary never, up to this day, have still not happened.
What kind of things, if you want to talk about it?
I think I'd prefer not to.
Okay, that's fine. Did the union have a strong shop steward structure, and did it work with its stewards?
No, they didn't. Again, because of the transient business, that just about the time you had someone who had been there long enough and had begun to know the business, then they became a shop steward, and a month later they'd quit and gone on someplace else.
And were the positions that you held elected and appointed positions?
They were actually, my position as recording secretary was an elected position. As an assistant business agent, actually, and eventually as a business agent, it was appointed, but the membership did not appeared to understand in my case that this was it. They always put the two things together. And as far as they're concerned, they believed that they were electing me for a 2 or a 3 year term. And just never would believe, even no matter although I say I tried to explain to them, they still believe that we want you to be there because we want you to be around. You understand our problems.
Do you feel that you brought specific kinds of skills to the union as a woman? For example, an ability to talk to some of the other women who were...
Yes, I do. I feel very strongly about that. I certainly, in the years afterwards, kept pushing the union and reminding them, you know, that there is a place for women and there are women, that you should be trying to bring them along. In several instances, they did try to do it and then discovered again that the person they had chosen was a person who had family commitments and who just really couldn't exist as a business agent because of the hours. In this type of industry, you can't work a 9-to-5. I think when I applied for this job with the government, one of the questions they asked me was, like, why are you thinking of this position rather than the one in the union where you are in effect making more money? And I said, it's a very simple thing, that I just look back over the last week. And in the last week, I have been out to meetings 4 nights, and I did not get home till after 12 o'clock. I already had commitments made for 9 o'clock the next morning, and I kind of thought I'd maybe like to start working an 8-hour day. They assured me that when I came to work, I would very seldom have to work nights. I discovered within 6 months I was right back into it. No, I'm not going to blame the government. It's probably something of myself. But I find eventually I became associated again with women, and I discovered that women are available at night meetings, at conferences on weekends. So despite the fact that I'm supposed to work on Monday to Friday, I still find myself going to many, many meetings at night. I go out to women's meetings at noon hours and brown bag it because the women are just getting away. And weekends, again, are often taking up with conferences because I'm a woman and they see me as a woman that has some experience. But it, certainly the union, it was a thing. If you were organizing a place, you live with those people. You know, I've been phoned at 12 o'clock at night or at 10 o'clock at night, them saying, we get off shift at 12 o'clock. We think our employer knows. Can we meet with you because you can tell us what we should do next? You know, so I certainly did. I didn't object to it. I mean, I didn't hide my telephone number. I felt that my job was to be available when I was needed, and that was the way I worked. It's still the way I work.
What places did you organize?
Let's see. Okay. I had to start reorganizing the Georgia Hotel. I went into the Bayshore Inn when it first opened, and please believe me, trying to talk to, I had discovered there in Trader Vic's, I had three classes. Yes, I guess it's really three classes of Chinese people. You had the young Canadian-born Chinese who had been to university, who was going to work as a busboy. You had experienced Chinese who were going to be waiters who had been trained someplace else. You had Chinese cooks who worked in the kitchen who could not speak English at all. So you try and sign up these kind of people and change your thinking to try and point out in language that they can understand when you couldn't differentiate between them as to what level you were, whether you were talking to a university person or a person who may have been in Canada for a period of time but had never been in such a large hotel in his life. I remember the Blue Horizon. This one down on Marine Drive. You can remember that one. The Doric Hotel. The Burrard Motel, which I never made. The Burrard Motel I was in the process of negotiating when there was a conference on, and most of the delegates from the island IWA stayed there. So I had most of the people organized and was nearly ready to put in an application when I had to go away on my holidays. So I told them, you know, just to hold the fort while I was away, and that if they were asked if they belonged to the union, by management just to say no. I didn't think if he found out he would ask them the question, but your best safeguard was to say, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I came back from my holidays to discover that they, not knowing I was had been working in the hotel, had gone to management and said, hey, how come you're not paying your desk staff union wages?
So the IWA people?
Yeah, because they didn't know I was organizing the place. And they had had assurance, apparently somewhere along the line, that union wages were being paid even though the people weren't in the union. So management immediately started to change the rates and went to the housekeeper who was responsible for me being in the place and asked her if she knew anything about the union, and she said no. The assistant housekeeper who was also involved said yes. Fortunately, he'd gone to, you know, he wasn't going to cause any waves, so he was very careful and stayed away from the assistant housekeeper, but started to talk to the housekeeper about how they really didn't need any other influence, and we laid charges against them of changing terms and conditions during the time negotiations were going on.